Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Humanity of Trading podcast. I am your host, Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host and series creator, Cleo.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to invite Baird to join us to do a recap episode.
Wasn't it even Baird's idea? I think it was Baird's idea to do a recap
episode. You got the name. Well, this might have been my idea, but you got the name from the interview you did with me, and we talked about the Humanity of Trading, and afterwards it got titled Humanity of Trading.
Yeah,
and it just stuck, and you're like, that needs to be the name for the series.
That's right. Because the first episode was with Baba and Joel and me, and that was January. So it's been over a year now.
Point. Yeah, we've been doing this for a year.
Yeah, and that first one did have a different name. I was looking back through them today. That one we called it The Voices in Your Head, because I think we were talking about... God, what were we talking about in that one?
I think it was... I mean, I don't remember.
I listened to a bunch of old episodes, but I didn't listen to that one again. All I remember is it was kind of teased as an ambush of Kyle.
No. That was later, I think.
Oh, that was another one.
She finally got to do one with me. That one took me a while to get into and to open up for. And to even be open to the idea, I was kind of nervous about putting myself out there for some reason. I don't know why.
It was weird. So great. I want to talk about it that. But I meant, Baird, that you came up with the idea of the recap for this, this very episode.
Yes.
Yes, he did. He did, yes. Yeah, I think so. So we can give him, I think, the duties of maybe leading the conversation today then, since it was his idea.
Right.
So back to the very first one we did. One of the notes that I made, one of the things that I think really stuck with me out of that was when we were talking to Joel and we were talking about fears. And I was very surprised to hear how much the fear of death played in the stuff that he was battling. Do you remember that?
I do.
Man, that sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole because it started making me thinking about that. And I have some issues, I think, that are unresolved around that whole concept and the idea of my own death. I remember Eric Smolinski gave me some stoicism exercises to practice. And one of them was visualizing your own death. And to be honest, I've not been able to do that yet.
There's a theme there because Sean talked about this and Aaron did as well.
Oh, yeah.
And that one of the exercises that they asked their coaching clients to do very early on is somewhere around the theme of write your obituary or visualize your eulogy or, visualize your funeral and tell me about, what people are saying about you. What do you want people to remember you by at the end of your life?
See, and that seems really like it seems like that's focusing on a different aspect of the whole thing, the whole cycle, right? That's focusing on what people say after you're gone. But the exercise that Eric gave me is to visualize in vivid detail, your actual demise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the idea behind that is to just become less afraid of it. If you, confront it and think about it and conceptualize it, then it becomes a lot less scary, I think. Or at least that's the idea. But
okay.
Like I said, I haven't gotten that far yet.
I think a lot of people end up doing psychedelic assisted therapy. I mean, there's one thing to do, psychedelics if you're just doing it to party, but there's other possibilities of being with this kind of thing.
You're talking about the ayahuasca,
Like mushrooms or something.
Psilocybin,
I mean, with a professional, right? Psilocybin, if you're going to be going into your death.
Is that a real study? Is that a real thing? Or is that one of those foo-foo, fringe
who
science
knows?
Things?
It's probably fringe science. I mean, everything's fringe until it's real, right?
I guess that's
everything that's around true. Psychedelics is fringe in the U.S. because of all the bans around them and the Schedule I crap, which is, at least that stuff's turning around. Not to go completely off topic here.
I know, right? Talk about the
there's been
of
some
trading,
amazing studies.
It all goes back to psychedelics.
There's been some amazing studies in Europe for PTSD and using psychedelics for PTSD treatment.
Yeah.
I've
and then in the US, the VA the VA has finally been authorized and funded psilocybin research with vets for PTSD. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
There's also the MAPS program for MDMA with the same serving vets too, and PTSD generally.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Sean talked about it more in his interview about, you know, visualizing the end of your life and, you know, visualizing your, I'm going to totally misquote this now. So, but visualizing, you know, what are people saying about you and visualizing your eulogy, write it down as a big part of that is an exercise to identify your values.
Yeah.
What are you doing this and why are you doing this and helping you keep focused while you're trading on, are you being true to yourself or are you, to borrow somebody else's phrase, or are you just gambling?
Yeah. Speaking of Sean's value exercises, that was one of the hardest things I think I ever had to sit down and try to figure out was my values after the conversation we had with him.
I loved that conversation that the three of us had with him.
That was really difficult to tease all that stuff out, but I think I finally got to a place.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I might have to consult you after this for some notes because that's Sean's has me on. That's my assignment right now with Sean is to sit down and figure out my values.
Have you brought your wife into it yet?
No.
That made a huge difference.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't try to do it all yourself. Let her help.
No.
Some good insights.
But yeah, that's part of my homework assignment. I'm doing some individualized sessions with Sean. So that's part of my homework is to go through and identify those values.
Speaking of Sean, we're supposed to do another one with him at some point, aren't we? Were we going to do like a guided meditation or something with him?
So Sean is so about mindfulness. So Bear and I have both joined his Discord community, and Bear joined first and then I followed. And he does mindfulness sessions at least once a week. And I've said this and I'll keep saying it. It's like the best mindfulness. It's just really real. Like so much of the mindfulness sessions that I've listened to just in the past, just in various contexts, meditation or whatever, it's such like foo-foo spiritual language. And that's kind of cool on the one hand, but Sean is so not that. I mean, if you listen to that episode, he is like anti foo-foo. He's just like really grounded and no BS and honest. And it's so, it's just surprisingly good. Yeah.
He's got a great voice too.
He like, really does.
What is it with the psychologist that we talk to where you can just listen to him talk for hours? Sean, Rich Friesen.
A lot of practice. Rich Friesen. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know Rich. I asked him about it one day and he told me like it's the way he holds himself. He opens up, takes deep breaths while you're talking. And
I'm sure it's a very conscious, directed practice by Rich.
I'm curious if Sean does the same, if he has to put the same effort to it or if it comes naturally to him.
I think it's probably like an unconscious competence at this point. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. After 20 years of practice being a psychologist, I think you kind of develop a style and a rhythm and a voice in that.
Yeah. And he was the last episode. He was the last person that we spoke to in this humanity series. Mm-hmm. I think there's what, like 10 episodes or something over the last year. That's about one a month. And reflecting on that, you know, this is like a humanity recap.
We did 10. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I want to say that I'm really grateful for everybody that we've spoken with. Like I've gotten really valuable stuff out of each conversation. And I honestly think that it's kept me in the game of trading. I don't know if I would still be in if it weren't for the conversations and the connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're also insights and stuff, but
you've also,
I want to ask you about your favorite child, but Cleo, what was the thing that surprised you the most in one of those episodes? What was it that somebody said that just really...
I mean, I could actually, I took a couple notes here about each episode, and like one of the favorite things that I heard somebody say was Anthony Crudelli. He said this thing, I can't remember the exact quote, but...
Was it the thing about fighting to keep what you earned? And the fear of losing what you earned?
But he had so many gems. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So no, it was that, you know, he's trading and his dad is seeing him consistently lose money. And his dad's like, what are you doing with your life? You shouldn't be trading. And he's like, no, dad, I'm good at this. I know I'm not, I know I'm not successful financially consistently yet, but I'm good at this. I'm a trader. And he's like, people don't understand that. And like that was so striking to me. Like I felt very seen. Like I feel ridiculous often trading, but I'm a trader and it's
like part of who you are now. At
it's
this
part
point.
Of who I am. Yeah. And to have him be so honest and accessible also. I mean, that's also one of the things that I've loved so much about this series is everybody has been so open and honest and accessible. Like from the very first episode that we did, and you're saying, Kyle, about Joel, like, and death, everybody was so honest. And I was like, okay, I'm in. Let's do more of this. This is great.
Yeah.
And it's surprising.
That's absolutely after the first episode and how open and you know, your questions are kind of probing and deep, but in a really positive exploratory way. So I was just absolutely captivated after the first one. And that's why I reached out to Kyle. I'm like, I want to do one of these. Because I want to know the answers.
Yeah.
I don't know the questions.
Cleo does a really good job of asking a question that can be perceived as like a negative type thing. Like asking about like failures and struggles and those kinds of stuff. But the way she asks it, it almost is like you're giving them a chance to say something positive about the experience. Mm. And that's what I love about the whole thing.
Thanks.
You're never dwelling on what happened. It's always what did we learn from that? What was the thing you took away? What was the thing that helped you? Like we look at those things in ways that they improve us, not in the ways that they drag us down. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
So Kyle, what was a moment in an episode that caught you by surprise?
If you want to be really honest.
Yeah, please.
Okay, there's two.
We're here for.
There's two. First, Crudelli. Just getting Crudelli on the show. He was like my white whale. it's funny, like I think I was actually just afraid to even reach out to him. I remember talking with Dan about wanting to get him on when we were doing the Two Bulls days. And it wasn't until Cleo had, you know, come up with this concept that actually had something that I felt I could bring to him that would be beneficial to him too, not just me peppering him with stupid questions. You know what I mean?
So getting
to land Crudelli, getting him to say yes, I was just blown away by the fact that he'd talk to us. I mean, you know, nobody's on the internet basically, but the guy has time for everybody. He's such a compassionate dude. Really
he's so knowledgeable and he wants to help.
He does. He does. Yeah.
I love talking with him. He's so much fun.
And then what was number two? Number two was the fact that you guys wanted to hear about me. That was, that was hard to stomach, hard to fathom, hard to accept. That anybody cared what I had to say about myself or my life.
were you just hoping to kind of stay hidden behind the microphone and be the one asking the questions?
If you're asking the questions, then there's no spotlight on you. You get to be kind of in the room with everybody, but nobody's like watching you. There's no spotlight on you. You don't have the giant light shining in my eyes.
I mean, honestly, Kyle, I've been I've been tracking you for a few years and really loving how you do conversations. And I think that you are... Maybe you don't mean to be as revealed or known as you are, but I mean, I love how you have conversations. Well, I've told you this multiple times, and that particular episode was so great. Like, you have a kind of humility that is really refreshing.
That makes me feel good. Have an avocado. Inside joke there.
Now what's interesting is going back and listening to the episodes, I think there's one interview that both of you connected with very deeply and took a lot of pieces away. And I heard you talk about stuff from the interview for months afterwards. And that was Andrew.
Had to have been Andrew. Yeah, we did a couple with Andrew.
And family systems. Kyle, you went really deep in family systems.
Internal family systems, yeah.
That's and Cleo, I didn't know that's what it was called. With it.
But I got new stuff too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that whole idea of like just putting names and like Richard kind of opened me up to some of that. And I just didn't know what it was called at the time. Like he just, when we'd talk, he'd say, hey, can I talk to the part of you that's afraid of this or whoever, where this fear is coming from? Can I talk to that part of you? Can we give it a name? So we're doing all of the things. And I just never put the two together that that's what they were. Andrew gave me like a really good framework, I think, for trying to go and like figure out who all those parts of me are and gave me a way to try, like a blueprint for trying to make them like work together in harmony as opposed to opposing each other. Mm-hmm. So you've heard a lot. I think a lot of people in the room hear me talk about like emotional urges and making notes of those on charts. I want my emotional reactions to be something that I rationally interpret as opposed to impulsively acting upon. So okay. If I get that urge, I make a note on the chart, and then I can allow my rational side to join that conversation and say, hey, is this right? Or should we be looking for something else? Or should we stay away from this altogether? When you get all those parts working together, man, it feels really good.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you still use that stuff?
Yeah.
Every day, yeah. Every week?
One of the things that he gave us, one of the tools, was the committing to something daily. And that's something I still practice pretty religiously. That was the, okay. I'm going to take that's one thing that I'm going to do this morning, and then I'm going to do it. And regardless of whatever else happens, if I can do that one thing that I feel good about today, like today, I'm not going to move my stops. So maybe I take 2 or 3 stops and I have a losing day, but hey, guess what? I didn't move my stops. So the day was a success. So there's good. Little tips and like just things like that, that kind of help shift your personality and they shift the focus from like the results to the process. Another big thing that Rich talks about, which we need to get Rich on here for one of these. I think he would be fantastic for it.
Yeah, we really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got some stuff to say about Andrew's stuff as
Yeah. Go ahead.
That was so. I don't have to ask the question even.
Yeah. Andrew was really stressing the importance of being who you are, like having your trading fit into who you are and the different parts of mm-hmm. you. Instead mm-hmm. of trying to make yourself work into a system or something, it's like, okay, I'm going to accept that this is who I am, right? There's such an element of self-acceptance with parts work. And then, okay, given that this is who I am and these are my tendencies and this is what triggers me and this is where I shine, what's a trading system that's going to work for me? Yeah. And to really be fully expressed, it's almost like an art form. Like if trading could be an art form for those parts of you, what would your system be?
Do you remember when Sean, was it the first episode with Sean we did? It was kind of a similar thing. He was asking one of you guys, like, if you're like a trendsetter, if you're the type of person who wants to be out there like doing your own thing, then why are you following everybody else?
That's right.
Yeah, I think that was you, Bear. I think he asked that question.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I remember that really hit me. It's like, man, yeah, why? Why do we listen to other people when that's not our personality?
I can't remember exactly what he said other than it was almost a little bit vulgar and it was like, hey,
that's kind of
Shy. You're not honoring yourself.
Yeah.
You're not honoring yourself.
Right.
You know, stop trying to follow behind somebody. Go blaze your own trail. You're a trailblazer. Go do it.
Yeah. And he said it so bluntly and so succinctly and just such a beautiful way. Like, man, that really hit me.
Blunt. That's my favorite thing to look for. That's why I love working with Sean is he is blunt.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk more about Sean.
Okay.
That guy. he's incredible.
Not only that, he gives me great title names too.
Yeah, totally, right? He says these things are quippy. And like, I think that often where we'll be in a coaching call because he does these coaching calls in his server too once or twice a week. And there's little snippets. I'm like, oh my God, he should record that. Like, that is brilliant. He says these things sometimes. I'm like, where do you come up with this? It's so mm-hmm. right on.
Oh, he does the coaching calls with everybody?
In the server. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Anybody who's a part of it can come and join. Well, yeah.
And then they're recorded.
You can't record those.
That's what I've been working on. Yeah. I'm way behind. I've only got up to like episode 10. Mm-hmm. But the weekly sessions, there's one session, I think it's the Monday session, is recorded. So I've been going back.
Does recording it cause people to be less likely to open up and share in those, or are they all pretty?
So far, it hasn't seemed to. Mm-mm.
That's good. That's something I always worry about with recording that kind of content.
Yeah, and the Wednesday session is not recorded, or if it's recorded, it's not published. Mm-hmm. And that's much more interactive. The Monday session is more one way.
Gotcha.
At least in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's more he's presenting content from like his blog post that he's created. But I think he's changing that up because he's been doing it every week. And I think he's going to do it maybe a couple times a month instead of every week because it's really
making,
a lot.
Making content is very draining. Yes.
Yeah. It's impressive. But I would say that Sean's Discord server has really up-leveled my own trading game, which has been really awesome. It's such a funny thing because it's up-leveled my game in a more relaxed way.
Yeah. Like, you seem a lot calmer.
Yeah?
I don't know. Yeah. Even just today, sitting here, you seem like a lot more relaxed and just happy.
Funny. I mean, I feel relaxed and happy. Yeah. I mean, trading is a stressful thing to do. And I've been trading futures for the last few years somewhat, I mean, very inconsistently. Sometimes I'm profitable, mostly I'm not. And in a way, one of the things that Sean illuminated for me is like, I kind of have no business trading futures.
Really?
I mean, I do, and I'm going to still be doing it on some level, but it is the leading indicator of the market and it is the hardest thing to trade. And I'm just like a new person expecting to be profitable and I'm only almost 4 years in. And like to expect that a person would be profitable under 5 years, like this is one of the things that I've gotten from him, is like unreasonable actually, that it's just so uncommon. And I've actually changed to trading some commons and I've learned options and like I'm more of a swing trader right now and that is so much better.
Yeah. I think that's as much as personality. And that comes back to one of the things that a lot of people have emphasized is find the trading that fits your personality.
Yeah.
Build a system around your personality. Don't try to shove your personality into somebody else's system. Like for me, options are disastrous because there's too many variables.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many times, you know, I had the right direction. I had a good entry, but my timing was off. So
timing, you know, product selection, like,
oh yeah. I mean, so I get killed so in theta. I would have a trade go in the right direction from the right point to the right target, but my theta was off.
Yeah.
And So there's ways, man, we might need to put you guys in touch with Eric Smolinski because there's ways to combat that. There's ways to structure options trades.
There absolutely is. I think the point for me is that I've fiddled around with a bunch of those things the first couple of years, options and swings and some of the different stuff. And it's for my personality, it's that short to medium term scalping, you know, 5 minutes to an hour.
I kind of want to use it for more of a, I think there's some value. I remember kind of drifting back and forth between options and futures for a while there. And after like deep diving into futures for like a year and a half and then going back to like triple Qs and trying to trade options off of that. And I remember having a much better read on it because of the experience that I had with futures.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I watch Aaron do that on a regular basis. Go back to another interview. He talked about that, is that, you know, sometimes for some of these bigger moves, it's a lot easier and a lot more comfortable to do it via options.
Yeah. Cause you can just position size and then use that for your risk. Right.
Right. And he's using all the same analysis. He's using the same zones, all of those pieces. He's just expressing it via options.
Right.
And so, I trade with Aaron most days on voice and that's one of the things he'll even call out. He goes, you know, hey, we're at this point at ES, I'm going to buy puts or I'm going to buy calls here for this target in this spot. So,
yeah, especially when you're trading futures like prop accounts or even in your own accounts, a lot of times people don't want to hold it overnight. And options gives you just an added flexibility of being able to hold things for longer.
It does. It does. Different margin requirements. Even when I was trading cash accounts, different margin requirements. It was really advantageous to be able to do options for that kind of stuff.
Did you say you were trading commons too, Cleo? Like just straight shares?
I love that. It's so relieving. I don't have a stop loss. It's just lovely.
Right. What's the worst that could happen? They can't even hurt your feelings on a bad day,
I'll just keep this for 10 years. It's fine. Yeah. I think there's this idea that futures are kind of sexy. honestly, to trade, you know, like, and QE, it's like, and I think I felt a little bit of pressure to be successful at futures on, or I self-imposed pressure or something. And I still want to, it still compels me.
It's a puzzle that needs to be solved.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I feel like that's a long game. And same, it's made me better, I think, like being able to tune into other possibilities of different, like, but trading other stocks and even options, like, just seems so much easier to me. Mm-hmm. And I like the process of researching also, like ChatGPT is my bestie, you know, like, yeah, okay, well. ChatGPT, like, why is this stock down? And what's going on with this? It's just the best.
That's awesome. What to get you set up with Sanctum
AI.
I'm
so much the opposite. I mean, this is what I love. This is what makes a market. Yeah. Is the personalities. And you know, for me, that was the appeal of futures. It's like, wait, I can learn one thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I stumbled into the, you know, the spicy Latina crack addict of NQ. who of course, you know, is tamed by comparison to natural gas, but still, you know, I just get completely hooked on it. I spent a while on ES and it didn't move in a way.
I've actually gone away from NQ, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
I'm trading mostly YM and ES now these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was doing a lot of that in early December. I was trading NQ and ES. I was kind of switching back and forth.
The thing with NQ is I couldn't get the risk doesn't make sense. I want to trade like a minimum two contracts, and I want my risk based on the size of my account to be around $50 per trade. And I just can't do that with YM or with NQ consistently. I miss too many trades.
Same. That was my big problem.
Yeah. With YM, you get, because, you know, a point is about a quarter of what NQ is, and you still get just as expansive a moves. Mm. It's almost like trading it on slow motion or on easy mode, I call it.
Yeah, you really have to, with NQ, you really have to size down.
Yeah.
That's a different set of challenges for me, but.
I might need to go revisit it, though, because I've actually gotten my YM dialed down pretty good to where I'm typically using a 25 to 20 point stop on that. Okay. So maybe I could get my NQ tightened up a little cleaner. Maybe that was just my personality, not wanting to accept losses at the time, and the new markets actually would allow me to.
I mean, MNQ is just the hardest thing to trade, points, right?
That's an MNQ.
Yeah.
25 points, 50 bucks.
I'll tell you what, though, it gets a lot harder to accept 40 points on YM trade when you're used to 40 points on NQ being worth four times as much.
Yeah, there is that.
But yeah, there's something that we missed. We talked about my white whale. Leo, we didn't talk about yours.
Let's see. You know, this seems just kind of, I don't know if it's silly, but I haven't spoken with another single female trader.
So I have a couple that I've been doing some research that I've talked to in the past and some other ones that I think that might be a good fit for you. I'll get you that list and let you take a look at it.
Great. Yeah. I'm just like,
awesome.
I'm interested in that. I know that there's a couple women in Sean's server, but they're not that active. You know, it's a unique experience to be a woman in this field, and it's awesome, and it's different. You know, right. It's like a.
I think I remember when I think Kira Turner was somebody I talked to about being a woman in this arena and like some of the struggles that she had to go through. I don't know how in depth we got into that. I don't think I was trying to tackle that as a man. It wasn't really my place, but I mean,
I imagine, like, for myself, mostly, like, professional endeavors and just generally, I often am the only woman in the room, actually, with what I do. And maybe that's even partly, it's like, I'm drawn to...
My wife's the same way.
Kind of competitive environments or something.
My wife does not get along with other women as well as she gets along with other guys.
And there's... But I mean, there's definitely, they're out there. They're definitely not as common on X. There are a few, there's at least a couple that I chat with on occasion.
I think the problem is the majority of them don't want to be the face of anything. I think we've reached out to a couple in the past and they're just, no, I'm good. I'm happy doing my own thing.
Yeah. I mean, the other, if there's another white whale, it's like, Like, I'm excited to talk to Flary, actually. I've been wanting to talk to him for a while.
I keep forgetting to get him nailed down on a date. I was trying to get Bank set up for you next.
Because we got a corner.
Flary said yes already.
Pro, you know? Like, I want to talk to people, like guys and women too, but mostly guys that are just really impressive. And it's like my favorite thing when impressive guys who have a version of mastery in anything are open to being honest and, you know, talking about their experience. It's like my favorite thing. It's what has me here. You know? Mm-hmm.
I think you get some really good stuff out of Flary. He's led quite the life. I'm surprised you didn't mention good old George Papazov.
Oh, right. That's right. I can't believe I didn't mention that, too. Somehow I didn't. What the
Sorry,
hell?
George.
No, that was amazing. I had wanted to speak with him for 6 months or something, and we finally got to.
When I first, we were first talking about the idea of doing this, that was the one guest I think you wanted from the very beginning. Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have been a fangirl of his for years. He's really the person who turned me onto Futures. And
me too.
I've listened to almost all of his podcast episodes. And the way that he is he's so smart and gentle and friendly and has such good use of metaphor and is funny. And
he's got just a touch of woo, just enough that he's...
Yeah, like, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Just enough woo-woo to keep
you entertained. Just enough woo to keep you interested.
Yeah. And we even had in our episode with him, there was even a moment of some difference with a little kind of political issue and how he navigated that. There is to be able to see things a little differently, but to come together and see the validity of the other's perspective and be in a place of connection, I was impressed with how he handled that. Mm. And
that was when he's talking about moving to Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a yes ander. He like yes ands everything.
Mm-hmm. Must have been all those improv classes.
Right? Yeah.
Also, speaking of Mind Over Markets, I don't know if you saw, but it is back. They did relaunch it with Vico and Fatty, I think, being the main contributors
now. I haven't seen it. Excellent.
I just came out a couple weeks ago, maybe, the first couple episodes. I think it literally just relaunched maybe a week or two ago.
Cool. Do you know if George has moved to Florida yet, by the way?
I don't. I haven't. I think I've spoken with him since the new year, which I probably should reach out.
We were maybe going to talk to his wife also.
Yeah, she was going to do a. She was in
NLP.
NLP. That was it. Yeah.
I was going to say. I was trying to remember what it was called. They're both really deep into NLP. I thought they both done
I think she's training. a licensed practitioner though, right? Yeah.
Yeah, she's not a trader, but I also have wanted to talk to a trader's wife. So she's a trader's wife and a practitioner of change work.
That one's been a little harder to put together than I thought it was going to be, because we keep getting people they kind of say, yeah, I'm kind of into it. And then you try to get a date and they're like, maybe not. Never mind.
Oh, that conversation's been out there for at least 6 months.
Right. Yeah. We've been trying to set up the wives conversation one for a long time now.
So anybody listening, they could just get an alter ego, you know, right. And just
a little voice box and we're going to go.
Don't have to tell who your husband is.
That's right.
I'll get a vocal changer too if you don't want him hearing it. What you have to say. let's see. What else? What else is on this list?
So the only one that seemed to produce a whole second episode of Outtakes and Extras was Andrew. Or was that not the Humanity episode that extra?
The extra one was a follow-up that we did because we were just so into that family systems idea that he gave us some worksheets to do, and we decided to go and do a follow-up. Did it properly.
And then I think you guys did another one without me, just the two of you plus Andrew or something. And then Sean also, we've done a couple, and then maybe there's another upcoming potentially. But I also wanted to talk about Purdue's.
Yes.
Because the thing that I got from his is actually how much intentionality and personal development practice he does.
Oh God.
He's working out at, I don't know, 4 or 5 in the morning or something.
Yep.
Yeah. And he's listening to motivational speakers while he's trading. Mm-hmm. That was mind blowing for me. And like his use of, okay.
No, while he's working out, he listens to the motivational stuff while he's working out.
While he's working out.
Instrumentals while he's trading.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, really? I thought I also asked about, do you also listen to it while you're trading? And he said yes, but.
Well, maybe.
And then also his relationship to work and trading, and like to have somebody articulate that piece. I think that was the first time where I was connecting with somebody talking about like, okay, this is how your work can impact your trading. Like, watch yourself. If you're pissed at your clients, don't go trading, you know?
But he was so, it was impressive to see how aware he was of that shortcoming. Like he knew that that was his trigger. He knew like the signs that lead up to it and like how to protect himself from it.
That's right. And there's more productive things to do with his energy than trade if he's in that place.
Yeah. I have so many painful lessons for me of when I get really frustrated at my day job, or, you know, I'd get frustrated at my day job and I'd flip over, you know, I'd need a distraction and I'd go over and I'd try to do some trading. And that was always just horrible.
Take it out on the charts.
Because I wasn't trading to trade. I was trading to avoid.
That's right.
Yep.
Sean talks a lot about that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was actually the thing that he was struggling with when he had his friend he lost, right?
Using it as a distraction. Yeah. Coping.
I've definitely done that. I did that. New Year's Eve, I was trying to avoid dealing with some personal stuff. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll just trade. and I was trading really well for the first few hours. And then the more I kept weighing on me of, okay, I need to go deal with this personal stuff and have some uncomfortable conversations. Then my trading just kind of went downhill. And I get back the whole day. And it's like,
almost like there was a point where the distraction was working, and then when it stopped working, then then it was.
And it was
done.
Good. It did help push me over the edge, and you know, because I didn't have a choice, I was locked out of all my accounts. So it was like, all right, I'll go deal with that stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think the dream is to get to that point before we have to lock our accounts, right?
Yeah. My biggest dream is a platform with a trailing profit lock that I can't defeat.
Yeah.
So, you know, it follows, you know, it's like that trailing stop on a trade. It's just on your day where, you know, as you go up, that hard stop follows you. And if you start to lose,
so you can't get, it locks you out.
And there's great tools in there for that. When I was trading on Sierra, there's great tools in there. The problem is that all I had to do was get mad and I could just go disable the tool. And it's like, okay, that doesn't stop me.
That's when you extra need the help.
No, that's when you need the commitment. That's when you need the commitment in the morning. I'm not going to defeat these overrides.
Right,
I'm not going to override these account controls.
Right. Or you need a trusted trading partner where, you know, they're the ones that know the passwords to your controls, not you. That's kind of what I need. And that's just my own weakness, but I'm perfectly aware of it. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I think we touched on this and, you know, more than once, but we definitely touched on it when in the episode where you interviewed me was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too.
What keeps me going in trading and especially in futures is it's forced me to deal with so many personal issues.
Mm. Yep.
You know, modern issues and stuff going all the way back to childhood. You know, just huge amount of stuff.
You are very open in talking about that stuff.
Are you still using the biofeedback stuff? The heart monitor and that?
No, I've been super slacking on it. I've got it sitting right here. Here's my chest strap, my heart rate monitor chest strap, which has got a lot of dust on it because it hasn't been used in at least 6 months.
What has you slacking on it or not using it?
That's a really good question. I don't have an answer to.
Do you get annoyed when it doesn't let you take a trade?
Well, no, it's not set up that way. Although that's really cool. That was one of my therapists. That was one of her suggestions. She's like, I've got a brilliant idea. You can patent it. And I just want credit. And I was like, okay. And she's like, you know, set up a system so that if your heart rate goes above a particular level, it will lock your trading account.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, there's some similar stuff out there. So I don't think we could patent it, but
also, your heart rate may spike when you need to like close something out too. You don't necessarily want to be locked out of your account.
It's That's true.
Right. Well, so that's where you get to the, you know, is it going to flatten, you know?
Yeah.
You know, use your heart rate to flatten it, or is it just going to lock you? And yeah, that could be bad if you were in a situation without stops, which you shouldn't be in a situation without stops. So
I don't know if you heard Baba this week, but he was almost in that situation, or last week. He had his internet drop out while he was in a trade. But luckily he has Teton order routing and that server side orders. Yeah. But if he didn't have that, then, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, most of the stuff now is all server side. So
a lot of the Sierra, I think the Rhythmic Sierra is still not. You have to switch to Teton if you want Sierra to be server side.
I haven't done anything Sierra Rhythmic since June. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Lucky. I'm going to have to go back to there because at some point I'm going to transition over to cash accounts rather than prop accounts. And so I'll have to transition back to a different platform.
That's kind of where
I got into the props.
I think you dodged one then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm giving the futures desk guys a shot because talked to the owners a few times and I do like what they're saying, what they're doing, what their actions are at the place. I'll give them a try, but I'm not ready to put everything into it, if you know what I mean. Like, I want to trade both at the same time, and I'm not going to get into another FTT situation where all your eggs are in one basket.
Good.
I've got a question for you, Barrett. Something about, like, you want to create systems that lock you out of your account, ideally, with, like, trailing profits, okay, or maybe you get so angry you would override something so you get back into your account. Like, there's a really interesting – I don't exactly know what the question is there, but it's like, okay, one –
there's a lack of impulse control.
A lack of impulse control, right. And what I'm curious about is with all of especially Sean's mindfulness stuff, like are you developing more impulse control or is there anything that is supporting you? Because I totally respect having external systems to keep us from doing our like maybe it's addictive behavior or whatever the thing is. Like as a
self-destructive behavior for me.
Yeah. As like a band-aid. But I imagine that's my guess is that you would like to be able to not have to have that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a band-aid. That's a learning tool.
Yeah.
And it helps me, you know, like right now I have that, you know, the X platform I use is really good for, it's got a, you know, personal daily loss limit. So I set my loss limit on all my accounts. And if I start, you know, trading impulsively and, or go on tilt, I can only go down so far before it just cuts me off and cuts me off for the day. And it's great because it's also a dollar amount that's small enough that I'm like, ouch, but yeah, okay. That's just part of the process. But it also still has the ability to, and that's one of the features of talking about changing is it also has the ability of, I can see myself and it's like, if I get stopped out really close to that level, I can go override it and turn it off. Or I can move the risk level and go, oh yeah, give myself a little bit more risk for a period of time. And that is, it snowballs.
It's, you know, micro negotiations.
It is in the worst so possible intense. Way.
It's, oh, and God. They're What's so that? Slow. They're so slow
was
and they
that
build
a Crudelli? Up. Oh, it was a Crudelli. Deli, he said it was one of the wisdoms from his father. If you don't step back and reflect on the mistake you made, it won't be the worst mistake you make that day.
Such a great quote.
And that one, I was driving when I was listening this weekend when I was listening to the episodes and I was driving, I was listening to that. I was like, oh, have I done that? Wow. that was a pretty impactful one for me.
I mean, it could also just be that like you do need these structures in place to support you with the impulse control. And then the work is to not go in and override that system that's supporting you, right? It's like, at what level is the impulse control needing an intervention, right?
That's interesting to me. I need those crutches. And, you know, I'm recognizing my limitations. And at the same time, that's one of the things I look at. It's like, man, if I had that crutch. And so for me, it's that's one of those kind of next learning opportunities is if I can't find the tool that's going to give me that, then I need to develop that skill on my own. I need to develop that skill that says, hey, I'm up 50 points for the day. If I go down to 30, I lock. And that's hard. That's really hard to do.
Can I offer an idea or something you can give a shot? Because this sounds very similar to something I've struggled with for a long time and still struggle with. But for me, the root of it all comes down to acceptance. It's when I don't want to accept the fact that I had a losing trade. That's when I want to move my stops. I don't want to accept that this idea is wrong. So one of the, this actually comes from a manager. It's like, this is one of his recommendations was you take that stop, say something out loud about it, acknowledge it. Like, oh, that sucked. All right. Well, guess I was wrong. Let me see what else is going on. Or the one that I was doing that I really liked was I just paid for new information. What is that telling me? Okay. Thinking the idea is that my stop was telling me that this setup has failed. Now I need to look for something else, or I need to look for the reasons why. I need to stop believing in that idea because obviously I just paid for information.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of one of those signals on the day for me.
Yeah.
Is I'll be watching price action and I'll be looking, say I'm in a trade at 330 and I'm expecting it to go to 400. My target's 400. I mean, realistically, it's going to be 396 because
Front run it a little bit. Yeah.
You got to front run yourself and then maybe a little bit more. not the topic. So, and I'll be sitting there and I'll be watching the price action and it'll stall at 350 and it'll kind of, you know, oscillate between 340 and 350 and 340 and 350. And I'll catch myself even saying out loud, it's like, if we can't push through 350, it's going to have to go back to at least 300.
Mm-hmm.
And the test on the day is whether or not I have the ability to actually take action on that statement.
Can you move your stop?
Because the thing that I should be doing is moving my stop to at least break even or moving my stop into profit and then actually be prepared to, okay, if it breaks, I know it's not going to be a 15-point pullback. Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a 15-point pullback. I think it's going to be a 70-point pullback.
Yeah.
So what I should be doing is prepare, A, tighten my stop, and B, maybe even prepare to change direction. And that's kind of one of my tests on the day that I'm looking at more closely now. And even like today, I'll notice, you know, a trade's good in my favor, you know, not huge, 10, 15 points, but it's stalling out. And one of the tests is, can I at least move my stop into break even? Because it's stalling out. It's not doing what I expected it to.
Man, are you writing down those
thoughts? It's not following the setup. So what I should be doing when it's not following the setup is at least tightening my stop.
Or at least make a note of it on your chart, dude. Like write it down.
Yeah, right.
That'll trigger you start taking action if you take the time to make note of it somewhere.
That's the main thing I hear you saying, Kyle, is like, especially speaking the thing out loud.
Interrupt the cycle.
Become aware, like where I'll become aware to it.
It's like trying to wake up in a dream, right? You got to have something to snap yourself out of it. You need those mechanisms. Yeah.
And I caught myself this morning. I was like, I caught myself. I didn't move the stop. I sat there and I watched it come back to my entry and go all the way down to my stop. And I'm like, I saw that coming and I didn't react. I need to step back. And I kind of took a half step back and I took another trade and I hit a stop and I was locked and I was glad. So I'm like, okay, I'm locked out for the day because I'm not trading well. I should be locked out for the day. And it was great because then I did finally take a step back.
It's almost like the pressure to succeed is gone when you hit that lockout, right?
Right.
It's like, I
wasn't locked out of a combine account. So I did take a step back. I got into that combine account and, you know, I turned my performance around and I max that combine account for the day. It's like, oh, okay. So, you know, the lesson I got in there is to remember, you know, when I catch myself making those simple mistakes, that's when I really need to step back and I need to step farther back. You know, it's not a step back from the table. It's a go do the dishes. It's a go get coffee. It's go take a walk.
Yeah.
type of step back that I need to do. And I think that was kind of emphasized in some of the stuff, you know, some of the interviews that you did. I think Sean talked about that pretty well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Sean, I'm getting towards the end here, and I know we need to do another one with Sean, but Cleo, to wrap this thing up, I got to ask you, who do you want to get next year or this coming year? Like who should we be putting on the request list for you?
I mean, impressive dudes. That's what I want to talk to. I don't even know. We have Flair. I also really want to talk to Banks. I can't believe I haven't gotten to interview Banks. I mean, I can because he has a new baby. Like, that's what happened there.
Oh, yeah.
I was emailing him or messaging him right before we got on this, trying to get him down to a time. So he's working on it.
Great. I just admire him so much.
Besides, the baby's not new anymore. That's been like a year.
Still new. Under five, you're still a baby, basically.
Right. Oh, fair enough.
And I'm still chasing, I'm still kind of my white whale. I'm still chasing PAX. I'd love
PAX is my new white whale. PAX.
Great. Yep. I mean, Bear, you have been so influential in this series, too. You've been bringing people in. You've been encouraging so many ways. It's been really awesome.
Actually, you're the one who got Crudelli, I think, for me. Did I ever thank you for that? I think you were the one who actually set that up.
Right, I think that's how that went. So yeah, Bear has been a really essential
he's my Ahab
person here. Yeah. In this series.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad only you can see me blushing.
Fair enough. All right, I think that's probably going to do it for today's episode. So please, everyone, join me in thanking Cleo and Bear for joining us this afternoon. Remember to show our panelists some love. You can click on those links in the show notes. You can visit bandoftraiterspodcast.com so you never miss a new episode. We will be back soon with another exciting guest to pepper with questions. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green day.
Green.
Hey, make sure to thank Cleo for setting this series up and keeping it going. And Kyle for providing the forum. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Kyle. Yeah, it's been so fun.
Yeah, here's to another year.
Yeah, right? Here we go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.